What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Good morning. This is Morningstar Galley with Law and Disorder. On the phone with me this morning is Alexandra Koch with the legal defense team for Doug Chief Stankiewicz. Alexandra, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And just to provide some background information, Doug Chief Stankiewicz, also known as Chief, has been the longest serving death row inmate. He was on death row at San Quentin since 1978. To May 2024, he was transferred to the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo in 2024. 1 year ago, during this time, we were in Fresno, California, during the evidentiary hearing for Douglas Ray Stankiewicz, who also goes by Chief, from the Big Sandy Rancheria. Alexandra, can you give us an update from the evidentiary hearing that took place in Fresno a year ago?
Yes. At the end of the evidentiary hearing, Judge Harrell told us that he wanted the closing arguments in writing. So over the period of time of January until August, we prepared our closing argument brief. We prepared a closing argument rebuttal brief, and the DA submitted a closing argument brief. And then the judge had those under advisement, and and so his deadline for making a decision was December 27th. And he made a decision on December 24th, denying all of our claims in the habeas petition.
Really disappointing news, really frustrating to hear for those of us that were sitting in that courtroom. There was so much in terms of the evidence that was presented. In terms of there being a chance of freedom for Chief to be released after what has now been 46 years incarcerated, and the majority of that time, over 45 years, on death row. Alexandra, can you share some of the background on how you came to work on his case and what your experience has been?
Well, I was introduced to him by a mutual friend in 2014. And so I started going on visits and talking to him and or listening to him talk about his case. And there are a few things about it that just didn't seem right to me. Up until then, I had very limited experience in criminal law because I started practicing law in 1981, and I did a few criminal cases then. But I quit practicing law in 1988 and only started working on this case in 2014, information gathering. And then we got Curtis Briggs as an attorney, and that was in 2016. So I've been working under the supervision of Curtis Briggs since then, because I am a Washington licensed lawyer, not a California licensed lawyer. And I have done, you know, a lot of the work on this case in terms of writing, you know, motions, writing the habeas, writing briefs, et cetera. So I'm very well versed in the case.
And when the news when the really unfortunate news came forward in late December of 2024. What was your reaction and the reaction of the legal team for Chief?
Well, I mean, a variety, you know, it kind of covers a few different areas. The first one was shock, you know, just because we know that he's innocent. Although, of course, in our legal system, it doesn't matter if a person is innocent. You have to be able to prove that they were wrongfully convicted. And so we were shocked just because we did present so much. We thought we had at least, you know, some claims where we had presented enough evidence in the evidentiary hearing for the judge to rule in our favor, but that turned out not to be the case. He did not rule in our favor. We only needed to win one claim, and he ruled against us on every single claim. So, and at the same time, I have to say, you know, we're not surprised either. You know, we've had this, well, this judge has been assigned to Chief's case since 2012 for sure, and maybe going back as far as 2010. And for many, many years, he just ruled against us on everything, you know, all the way down the line. And so when we got the evidentiary hearing, which, by the way, only happens in 3% of the cases nationwide, you know, that gave us something to be optimistic about, because we had, you know, surmounted quite a number of hurdles to get to that point. So I would say, you know, we're obviously extremely disappointed. And at the same time, as I say, not really surprised.
Definitely understand and relate to, you know, that mix of feelings. For our listener audience, I will share that Douglas Stankiewicz walked into San Quentin State Penitentiary as a 20-year-old man in October 1978. After having his childhood was spent in foster homes, in foster care, he spent the next 46 years on death row, so the longest death row tenure within California history, and then was transferred to California Men's Colony, where he was being held in San Luis Obispo. So a very different experience after serving over four decades on death row. What are the next steps now in moving forward from the decision?
Well, there's a couple things, and I really think one thing that you did not mention that should be mentioned is that he was confined to Napa State Hospital when he was 6 years old for 9 months, where they pumped him full of heavy-duty antipsychotic medication. And, you know, really the truth is, who knows what all else. But I really feel that it's important to say that, considering that there's a increasing awareness of the, you know, so-called Indian schools. So he did not go to an Indian school per se, but nonetheless, he was institutionalized. And then after that, he was in foster care up until he went to California Youth Authority, which he went there initially because his relatives, you know, did not feel capable of taking care of him. So I just think that's an important piece of it, because, to me, part of what his case is all about is how the system has totally failed a lot of Native people. He's one of them, you know. So next steps are he will be getting resentenced because in 2019, the Fresno DA dropped the death penalty, and the judge sentenced him to life without the possibility of parole. And at the time, the legal team objected, saying, we want to present information about why he should get a lesser sentence. It shouldn't be life without, and so on. And the judge shut us down. He didn't let us present anything. And so that was appealed. And the Fifth District Court of Appeal in 2022 agreed with us and said, yes, the judge abused his discretion. He should have let us present information showing that he's entitled to a lesser sentence. So now that the habeas petition in Fresno Superior Court is completed, then he will be, you know, resentencing will be scheduled. And based on what's in the 2022 court decision, which, by the way, is on the justiceforchief.org website, if people want to look at any of it, all the documents are there. So now we will be presenting mitigation information and other information. And based on what the Fifth District Court of Appeal said, the maximum sentence he should get now is life with the possibility of parole. So if that's what the judge sentences him to, then he would be eligible for parole right away, based on the amount of time he's been incarcerated and based on, his age and based on the fact that the crime was committed when he was 19 years old. So that'll be coming up next. It's not on the calendar yet, but
it's absolutely important to include the information that that Chief was 6 years old, where he was heavily medicated and restrained while he was at Napa State. He also has stated that he was a victim of sexual abuse during that time. In Chief's own words, he states in terms of the case and the experiences, we say as California Indian peoples that 100% of Native youth are considered system impacted due to the history of colonization, due to the history of genocide and ongoing abuse through foster care systems, through state institutionalization. And Chief says that in his own words. He says, I was the target because I'm Indian and because of my family and my family name. He states in an earlier interview, my family was known for violence, was known for trouble, was known to start trouble and to be at the wrong place at the wrong time. But the police knew I didn't do it. They just wanted any Stankiewicz. And so in terms of the history of Fresno County, in terms of his family name, it is definitely known that Chief has received not only an unfairness in terms of all of the case information, but also it's important to include that his own family members, his relative Herbert Sample, who was the primary plaintiff in Sample versus Borg, which was a powerful win throughout the state of California in terms of protecting religious freedom for incarcerated tribal members, for indigenous peoples throughout California. And throughout his time incarcerated, despite those protections and those wins, he has spent a majority of time in solitary confinement, for wearing his hair long, and for advocating for those Native American and spiritual traditions.
Well, and by the way, it's a little bit off topic, but not really. It's my understanding that a lot of the prisons now don't have any Native American spiritual advisors. So even though Sample versus Borg was a win, Chief has not been able to attend any sweat lodges or anything else for decades. So, you know, I would say that right now, accessibility for Native prisoners to spiritual expression is in name only.
I agree with you. Over 50% of those positions are considered vacant, and they currently are not allowed to even have beadwork or have any beads come in to be able to participate in cultural practices.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, on a certain level, all of this just angers me greatly, you know, so... Well, and then I was also shocked to learn that one of the things that CDCR, California Department of Corrections, was talking about doing was having Catholic priests lead the Native circles. I mean, when I heard that, literally my hair caught on fire. I'm like, wow, that would even be considered. Considering the history of genocide, abuse, etc., by the Catholic Church and priests and nuns against Native children. Yeah, so sorry, but this stuff just really bothers me, really upsets me.
Yes, it's ongoing in terms of the institutionalization that, you know, Native American spirituality and cultural practices are not considered a separate religion, and so it all has to be held under the chaplaincy of other faiths and religions, including both the Catholic and Christian faiths oversee all of those practices and get to decide what is and what is not considered spiritual practices and what is and not allowed for incarcerated tribal members. Thank you for providing those updates and information, and we really appreciate you being on the show. And can you provide, I know you mentioned earlier, but provide the information in terms of contacting the legal team and support for Chief?
Yes, people can contact me. Because I'm kind of the front person since I don't practice in the courtroom. And my email address is alexandra@attorneyac.com. So if people, or they can also, if they go to www.justiceforchief.org, they can, there's also a contact link on there too. So, and as I say, that's where all the information is.
Okay, and again, that is justiceforchief.org. We have been speaking with Alexandra Cock. She is part of the legal defense team for Douglas Ray Stankiewicz, who has been incarcerated since 1978. I think it's also important to mention that in Chief's own activism and advocacy, he was part of the takeover of DQ University when DQ University was after the Alcatraz occupation, after the occupation and takeover of surplus lands, empty lands that were being held by the U.S. government. And so DQ University went on to become the first tribal college in California for Native peoples. That he was an integral part of that takeover, And was also in the Sacramento area, and his activism definitely continues today. Alexandra, is there anything else that you would like to share with us?
I guess in the interest of not saying anything too radical, then we should probably end it here.
Well, we definitely appreciate your time. We appreciate your dedication to Justice for Chief and continuing on, especially when there's these really, this really devastating news in terms of not having justice in this moment and in this time, in an incarceration that has continued on for over 46 years. We are appreciative of all of those efforts. And for more information, listeners can go to justiceforchief.org, and that will provide updated info on his case. Thank you, Alexandra.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.